Over the past few years, there's been significant media attention given to the condition chronic traumatic encephalopathy. This condition, which is felt to be due to either a major head injury or more commonly repeated blows to the head, which are typically sports related, can lead to a variety of symptoms ranging from depression to full-blown dementia. Dr. Adrian Cohen is the founder of NeckSafe, a not-for-profit charity dedicated to the elimination of preventable head and neck injuries. And I'm delighted to say he's live here in the studio. Good evening, Adrian.
Hi there, Ross.
Now, Adrian, how common is chronic traumatic encephalopathy?
Well, like so many things, the simple answer is we don't really know. Mm. It's a disease that can only be diagnosed post-mortem, which isn't a great way to diagnose anything.
No, it's a dreadful way.
Being laid open on a slab and having your brain cut open. But putting it this way...
I hope no one's at home having dinner at the moment, but yeah, keep going.
Dr. Anne McKee is the lead pathology researcher in this in the US at Boston University, has biopsied the brains of 79 former NFL players who've donated their brain. Mm. 76 of them had the diagnostic signs of CTE, or chronic traumatic encephalopathy.
You're kidding. 76 out of 79.
And yet, you know, we know there are thousands and thousands of people walking out there who aren't as good as they should be or could be, undoubtedly due to the long-term effects of this. Now, this is big news in the US. There's just been a $1 billion settlement with over 4,000 players in a class action to try and compensate them. There are still 300 or 400 other cases that have yet to come to court. So it's a real phenomenon. The same diagnosis has been made in soccer with Jeff Astle, an old West Bromwich Albion player, diagnosed at post-mortem and in a coronial inquiry in the UK to have died of chronic traumatic encephalopathy. It's in law in the UK. And in Australia, a player by the name of Barry Tizer Taylor, who went on to be a coach, and who a lot of people saw deteriorate over his latter years, donated his brain as well, and is the first Australian person to be diagnosed with CTE. So we know it's out there, we just don't know how prevalent it is, and we need to find out more.
Okay, so is there any treatment once you have the established diagnosis?
Like most dementias, probably not. So the whole idea and what we're doing here at NeckSafe is trying to find out enough at the preventative end of the spectrum.
Okay, so, but sport is such an integral part of modern living. What can be done to prevent chronic traumatic encephalopathy?
We need to know more. And so research means finding out exactly what is going on. There's so much subjectivity in this area, and we see that every week at the football. Should he have come off the field? Did the doctor make the right diagnosis? What about this new concussion test? And it's all full of people's opinion. Was that a big tackle on the field? Oh, he's a tough player. He should get back on there. And if he doesn't, there's something wrong with him. You know, what are the 12-year-olds at school doing? You know, it's all about trying to get some hard data around this. And what we're doing at Randwick Rugby Club, which is a long and proud tradition, is probably the premier rugby team in this country.
Yes. Look, I was born and bred in Maroubra, so I'm, as far as rugby goes, I've been a long-standing Randwick supporter, I've got to say.
Well, you're a supporter.
In the Ella areas.
And so is their board. So with luminaries like Bob Dwyer, who coached Australia to World Cup victories, and wonderful players like Simon Poitevin, who are legends, they're behind the concussion project that we're running there this year. Now, not only are we getting full baselines with as much cognitive data on the players as possible, we're actually measuring what goes on in the game.
Now, and how are you doing that?
We're doing this with a tiny impact sensor, no bigger than two pieces of chewing gum stuck together, and it's called an X2 biosensor. Mm. And it adheres behind the ear, right on the bone, because we want to see impacts going to the head, not to other parts of the body, or to other parts of the body that are transmitted to the head. And this is an accelerometer. It measures force in three directions, and it measures rotation as well. It's got a battery and it's got a transmitter, so it stores data. And at the end of the game, we're able to download the data and see exactly what went on. Now, where this is important is because we're talking about local football, but we might just as easily be talking about club rugby. Mm. We might be talking about schoolboy rugby. We might even be talking Super 15 and international rugby. Mm. You can't be everywhere and see everything. So what this impact sensor does is monitor for us the impact. And there are two important things. There's the G-force of linear impact and there's rotational force. And, and the concussion luminaries around the world right now are of the opinion it's probably the rotational force which is integral in the big hits that cause an instantaneous concussion or the multiple small hits that add up to short, medium and long-term problems like chronic traumatic encephalopathy. And people will still say, oh, it hasn't been proved, it hasn't been proved. It's very, very difficult to prove long-term damage. You can't conduct a study over the next 50 years where some people play rugby and some people don't, and that's the only difference in their life, and some get CTE and some don't, and so we're, you know, it's not that kind of thing. So we have to use the best endeavours we can to find out what's going on, and if we can monitor it, we can manage it.
Okay, so you were doing a trial at Randwick Rugby. So how are you actually doing the trial?
Well, we have the first grade rugby tide and about 30 players in all in that cohort. We've baselined them across a number of the cognitive tests that are done in sport at the moment. So there's the King Devick test of ocular scanning. There's the Axon Cogstate test. And neurocognitive tests are designed to test how we think and how quickly we process information. We're also doing balance plate testing. We want to see some objective stuff. We're doing a fascinating new science called transcranial magnetic stimulation, or TMS.
Yep.
And by placing a magnet against the skull and eliciting a small electric current on the inside surface of the skull, which is the outside surface of the brain, we actually get a twitch in the fingers, which we measure with an electromyograph EMG. Mm. Sounds wonderful, but essentially what we get is an electronic trace of what's going on. Objective data. You do that as a baseline for a player. You follow them through a concussive episode and you test them again afterwards and look for changes.
Well, but are you only looking for people during the game who've had concussive episodes, or are you just looking generally at the knockabout things that happen in rugby all the time?
Well, we are finding that there's a huge number of impacts during the game, and on average it's about 60 impacts greater than 10G for each player for each game. Now, very, very few of those result in the doctor, and Paul Raftos, the team doctor, has been behind this from the very start.
Of course.
Very few of those result in the doctor rushing out the field or someone coming off on a stretcher or being knocked out.
Mm.
But during the course of a game, we'll have impacts as high as 130 or 150G, and we use that data to go and see the players after the game and say to them, listen, you know, do you remember any big knocks, big tackles, any carries where you got hit harder than normal? And sometimes they'll say, oh, yeah, there's one or two that went away. I say, okay, that was 150G. Now, Muhammad Ali punched at 60G.
Hmm.
And I'll say, okay, so you've been hit harder than Ali would hit you. Mind you, you did have a run-up. You were inside your own 22 when you came forward with the ball with that. But because of that knowledge, we then go through some of these other tests and start to examine what's going on with them.
Mm.
Because it may be one large hit, and it may be that it's the consequence of numerous smaller hits over a period of time. And it's the same concept as the light on your dashboard in the car. When the light on the dashboard comes on, it says pull over, look at what's going on, have a check everything out, and if it's okay, then you can continue safely. You know that if you ignore the light, you're likely to do damage. Well, we're getting the same early warning system with the brain. Enough impacts to tell us there's not a magic number that says you get 100G, you've got concussion, because everybody's different.
Mm.
We've had players knocked out at 40G. We've had players sustained in excess of 170G and be completely normal to their teammates, their friends, family, and in fact pass all their neurocognitive tests because it didn't affect them on that occasion, on that day, at this stage of their life.
Yeah, but hang on, you've said 60 hits per person per game over a season. That's a hell of a lot of hits.
But that's the nature of the contact sports, and many people play contact sports without having any long-term consequences. What we've got to do is work out where that tipping point is. In other words, how many is too many? How much impact is too much? And we're not asking people, as soon as they have a big impact, to quit the game and never play again.
Mm.
What we're saying is you may need to rest for a week or two so that you're good for the rest of the season, the rest of next season, the rest of your career, and the rest of your life. The analogy is a knee injury. Now, I blew my knee out playing volleyball. If someone had said to me 5 minutes before I did that, you know what, there's just a tiny little bit of fibre there, one more jump, and you're going to need an operation and 2 years of rehab, or alternatively, you might like to sit down now and rest, I would have sat down. And that's what we'll be able to say to players. Sure. We're able to see what's happening by referencing what their impacts are. And by knowing that and the player, we start to get it very individualised. So what we build up for each player is almost, if you like, what's termed a concussion passport. We know their history, we know what they've been through, we know the impacts they're under, and we're able to make sensible decisions on whether they should play, if they're injured, when they should return to play, and longer term, when it's time to hang up the boots.
And so what I'm hearing from this is that you're doing this at Randwick Rugby, but what's the long-term aim with this, obviously?
If we can show that this technology is of benefit, then that's a huge plus for player welfare. We're interested in keeping people in the game safely. We want parents to feel like the codes care about what's going on, and research will help us determine what's going on so they can make sensible decisions
too. That's the key word here, the codes. We're not just talking about rugby, of course. We're talking about soccer. We're talking about rugby league. We're talking about AFL. We're talking about all the codes that involve potential head injuries.
We are, and we're talking about equestrian sports.
We're talking about boxing, about skiing. Boxing.
I try not to talk about boxing because it's a sport that's just designed to cause a head injury. In these other sports, it's an unfortunate consequence when it does happen, given the fact that players are bigger, faster, stronger and hit harder, and the nature of the game has changed. So we need to protect those players.
We'll take a break, guys, and we'll come back with more questions. If you have a question right now, 13 13 32, the telephone number. Are you looking at martial arts as well?
Yeah, absolutely.
Get some hits in martial
arts. Any questions, not just about concussion, but Adrian's also an expert in neck injuries as well. So if anyone would like to ask Adrian a question of that, please ring now on 13 13 32.
So back with more with Dr. Adrian Cohen on concussion and neck injury. Next here on Healthy Living, 13 13 32, dial that number now.
Telstra is giving customers more value on their new plans, like the 24-month $100 Go Business Mobile plan. Within Australia, you'll get unlimited calls and SMS to standard Australian numbers, and if you connect before June 30, you'll get 6 GB of data. It's more of the stuff your business needs to help you do your thing. Visit your local Telstra Business Centre for more info. Extra data, $10 per gigabyte. Automatically added in 1 GB blocks for use that month. Minimum total cost, $2,400.
At Mercedes-Benz, the dark night has arrived. The E-Class brings savings of over $9,000 on a striking E250 sedan night edition. This limited offer includes AMG body styling, 19-inch AMG alloy wheels, panoramic sliding sunroof, and much more. So enjoy what the dark night brings with a test drive at a participating Mercedes-Benz dealer today. Savings based on manufacturer's maximum recommended list price of new standard specification vehicle with individual listed features.
TUE and Banner Shop have come together to support local businesses, every week giving you the chance to win $1,000 worth of Banner Shop products. Banner Shop supplies banners, promotional flags, posters and many other cost-effective marketing, printing and signage solutions to help you promote your business 24/7. We all need to get our brand out there, so for your chance to win $1,000 worth of Banner Shop goodies, enter your details now. The TUE competition page at tue.com.au.
Coming up next week on the show, a major international model spotted our ads on the back of buses.
He's called in and he says he wants to give us a makeover.
Cue the music.
John, I don't want to be rude, but I think it's about you more than me. You're a blank canvas, but with me, there's not much to work with.
For once, you're right. You're not much to work with. Also on the show next week, the brains behind the hit TV show Married at First Sight.
Well, they say we've got good heads for radio, but after our makeovers, maybe we'll be able to move into TV.
Good luck with that.
John and Gary.
For Mortgage House.
2UE.
It is Healthy Living with Dr. Ross Walker and with Dr. Adrian Cohen. We're talking concussion and neck injury tonight, Doc.
Yeah, Adrian's an expert not just in concussion, but also in neck injuries. And we do have Jody on the line from Canberra to ask Adrian a question about neck injuries. Good evening, Jody.
Hi, how are you, Adrian?
I'm fine, thanks very much.
Look, I'm just ringing up in regards to, I'm finding a couple of times, about twice a year, I fall asleep and wake up with a really stiff neck, and it's quite difficult to turn my neck the next day, and it takes a couple of days to get better.
Well, there's a lot of reasons for that, and it comes through to your whole history and what you've done with your life. There are some simple things, some simple musculoskeletal issues. But if you're having continual problems, your local doctor's the best place to start. And then if he or she feels you need some x-rays to sort out what's going on with the anatomy inside and to examine you properly, I think that's a very good first step.
And, Jody, have you had a neck injury at all?
No, and I've spent a considerable amount of money on different pillows.
All right. Well, I'm agreeing with Adrian entirely.
Spend some more money on your GP and less on the pillows.
And I'd probably be thinking about having an MRI of your neck, because the MRI is the best way to diagnose what's happening with the neck if you're getting significant problems or your neck's getting so stiff. Are you getting any symptoms down your arm at all?
No, not at all. It's simply in my neck.
Yeah, well, it's probably, as Adrian's suggesting, just some form of neck strain from the way you're sleeping. But it's certainly something that I would not be just buying more pillows. I'd be getting a thorough evaluation for it.
Okay, great. Okay. All right, no problem. All right,
good to talk to you. Thanks for the call. Bye. Now, Adrian, just getting back to the concussion. So we're talking about doing this trial and with the results being potentially, what I can see is it may be mandatory for all people who are playing professional sport to wear the device to see how they're going. And it's something that I can see in the future, that you'll have a phone app and the parents whose children are playing sport could purchase the device, wear it during the game and download the information on the phone app. We make it that simple.
Well, it should be that simple. I mean, wearable technology is all around. There are heart rate monitors. Anyone that goes to a gym's got one or two or three things talking to their phone all the time. Mm. This is just information. And the more information we have about what's going on, the better we are able to understand our sports and understand the risks in them. So there's nothing wrong with a parent seeing something on there and saying, I think we need to go and get you checked out. Because, you know, 5 months ago, 5 years ago, they wouldn't even know that it had happened.
Yeah, well, if every weekend in Australia, we all know this during winter and even during summer, maybe the potential for head injury is not as strong during summer, but it's still there. We see the tragedy of Phil Hughes from last year with a severe head injury that he had from the ball, but that ultimately led to his untimely death. But when you think about these children running around every weekend and they're then going to, having to go to school and work and study, and then people in their 20s playing not just professional sport but playing amateur sport on the weekend and maybe attending university, they're playing rugby for uni or whatever, if they're getting recurrent knocks on their head, their performance at school or university is not going to be, or at work, is not going to be as effective as well.
You're right. We need to know more about it. And you mentioned kids. It's very important in kids. Children have a developing brain that is far more at risk of a concussive injury. Mm. And there is a phenomenon called second impact syndrome, which describes the fact that if they have an impact on the field and get sent back onto the field, they're at risk not just of having a concussion, but of sudden catastrophic consequences, including sudden death and long-term brain damage. And there's been two cases in New South Wales last year. Rugby league players airlifted to hospital. There was a death in New Zealand last year. There was a death in Ireland 3 years ago. There was a death in Canada of a 15-year-old girl playing rugby because they get sent back on. So this is an education message for everybody out there. It's not that important to get the kid back onto the field. Mm. Whether it's the, you know, the under-12s, whether it's the grand final, whether they're playing for a contract, whether you think they're going to, you know, move into the professional ranks and support you in your old age. It's only a game. And they are at risk. If you push them back onto the field and you tell them to man up and you say, it wasn't, you know, as soft as this in my day, we need to change that. And we may need legislation to change that. We're talking to our sports ministers right now.
So the message I get here is, even without the device, the message I get here is that if someone does have what seems like a significant concussive episode, don't put them back on the field. Is that what you're saying?
If they get knocked out, if they get dazed, if they can't remember where they are, if they look like they don't know what day of the week it is, when in doubt, sit them out.
Okay, that's a great message to end on.